Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, number 423 for comics originally released on September 16th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Wonder Woman number 44. Have you been reading this title on a regular basis, Drew?
If by regular, you mean when we review it, yes.
That would, I suppose, count as regular. Not what I meant, but that's a fair answer. This was the middle chapter of a story. And I've been reading the book not only since it started, but since the last probably few volumes have started. I've read, I think, every issue of every volume other than the first, and I read quite a few of the first. But I only got in near the tail end of that and then went back for back issues on that. Anyways, so I'm a longtime Wonder Woman fan. Middle chapter of a story arc, and I'll be honest, I didn't think this was a particularly engaging chapter, at least for me. And it wasn't bad. It was just kind of so-so. You know, the plot lines move forward a little, but not a whole lot. And it felt like we just went from one cliffhanger from the end of the previous issue to another one at the end of this one. And honestly, it's something of a forgettable book. I mean, she starts here having been shot with an arrow. And I'll be honest, and part of this is I've been reading, you know, have caught up on my comics lately, so I've read more than usual, whatever. I don't really remember who shot her. And that's on the one hand, that's on me. On the other hand, if this is something that matters, they should be a little more considerate to their readers. Maybe, I don't know, treat every issue as a jumping on point of sorts. They could have made this a little bit more accessible than they did. And I kind of liked what we got, but I didn't love what we got. And again, it felt like it was going from cliffhanger to cliffhanger, going through the motions. The flashback scene we get of one guy's life falling apart months earlier, and then apparently leading into the events of number 42, which is the start of this arc. In the context of this issue, it did zero for me. And if I was only reading a handful of titles, I probably would have a lot better chance of recalling what's going on in those couple of titles. But that's not me. That's not how I read and stuff. And I'm not finding the title memorable enough for these things to have easy recall for me. And I don't know. It's not bad, but it's certainly not great. Now, you coming in kind of from the cold, what were your thoughts?
Well, you know, yeah, I had a little bit of a hiccup, as you would expect, you know, trying to piece together who everyone was. But it was fairly accessible. But I think you hit it on the head, and it's something that's been plaguing some of the mainstream DC comic lately. It's okay, and it's good, but it's not great. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of been the mantra lately, on, you know, with a few nice exceptions, and it's unfortunate, but yeah, this one falls in that camp. I thought the art was really good. David Finch did the art, and it was really great art. And I think, is that his wife Meredith that
does the writing? His wife's doing the writing, yeah.
And that was okay. And that's where it became an okay book, because the story wasn't really that compelling. It did move forward a little bit, and there was a reveal at the end, and you know, she got the arrow out as the story progressed, and met a character that was, they had a nice back and forth. But all being said, it was kind of forgettable.
It didn't seem like I don't say a pivotal issue of the book, because I don't expect every issue to be pivotal, because at which point almost none of them are. But it didn't really seem to add anything to the bigger mythos.
Yeah, it's not a book. It's not a chapter in Wonder Woman that's going to, if you're a fan, it's not going to make you stop reading. If you're not a fan or not currently reading, it's not going to make you jump on.
Yeah.
So it's just right in the middle of the road.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's, again, to me, almost a textbook's definition of average in certain regards that way. I think it was a little bit better than average. Like you said, the art was really nice and stuff. there were one or two places, the splash page we got near the end felt a little kind of gratuitous splash pagey. You know, it's one of those things where we see Donna Troy in a new outfit, and getting a splash page there is almost so the artist can sell the original art or something. And just story-wise, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, because she gets this new outfit from a homeless person. And I'm like, if the homeless person had nice threads like that, why wasn't she wearing them? Again, this isn't bad. I think the art was better than the writing, but like you said, if you weren't a fan going in, it's really not going to make you one. But if you were a fan coming in, it's not going to turn you off the book. It really comes down to what baggage you bring into the issue as to what you think of it. But I would like a little bit more out of my comics than that. To me, this is a C+. It's a hair above average, but I've seen the title be just great things at times. And other times, really, it's like, wow, this is to they put out an issue, but why? This is better than that, but $3.99, I expect better than this.
Yeah, I'm at a C+ as well. It felt like an average book with a strong art presence in it. So I gave it bumped it up to the C+. And we're in simpatico here.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed that so much of the DC line at times feels right now to be just kind of, it's okay.
Yeah, I had such high hopes coming out of Convergence that didn't really make sense, but they would get back to the core line would really be sizzling, and then they would be weaving in these new ideas and new comics and seeing what resonated with the buying public. But the core line would really be firing on all cylinders once it came back.
That's kind of what my expectation was going into the new 52.
Yeah, I thought it worked for a little while.
Some better than others.
Some better than others, exactly.
You know, but it's one of those that DC is often able to get people, oh, well, I'll give it another chance. Mm-hmm. Yet rarely do they really monopolize on that and have the goods that we're expecting. And part of it is we're a tough audience, comic fans in general, tough audience to please. I get that. But they seem to be so busy trying to kind of wow us and razzle-dazzle us or whatever that they're not focusing on just solid storytelling. Really good art, every issue having payoff, and just the basics, you know, kind of the table stakes or whatever. And if they could get that under control and stuff, then they would be building up some goodwill, some momentum that when they really have just a stellar issue or a great plot point, it would, you know, pay off for them. I mean, to me, that's kind of where Marvel's done right is by and large, their average issue is pretty good. I would say on average, their stuff is better than the average at DC. And that's coming from me, a hardcore DC fan, long term.
Yeah, and I think their hires are a little high. Their highs are a little high too.
Oh, absolutely.
And really, really crackle. I really, really wish DC would focus on, you know, getting their core characters right, getting the right creative teams on those, so that each and every month, you know, you want to be a Flash reader, a Wonder Woman reader, Green Lantern. You know, you've got to read Justice League. You've got, you know, Superman, I think they're right trying to write the ship on Superman, and I'm actually liking where that's going. And Batman's in good hands. So they've got some threads of what they need to do, and get the rest of the stuff, their house in order, and then maybe everything else will fall into place.
I just look back at other times in DC when, like, the New Teen Titans was the book to be reading, or, wow, the Legion was really great, or Justice Society, or Flash, or Green Lantern, or, you know, whatever. And they just had a couple of books that everybody was excited about, talking about, they knew who the characters were, and things had really crystallized. And it seems like right now they're kind of struggling of, who exactly is Wonder Woman? We all kind of know, but don't really know, is what it comes down to. Until they can kind of hone in on what these characters mean to the comic audience, and embrace that, and you know, go forward with that, they're going to keep trying to do things like, okay, let's turn her into the God of War. Let's, you know, retool Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, etc. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with the characters. It's just you've lost sight of who they are. So I'm hoping at some point something will click over at DC and we'll see things just really start to align and move forward. But they're not there yet. And certainly this issue of Wonder Woman, again, not bad, but not great. So we'll see what happens. I kept hoping that after Convergence, after, you know, it's just how many more chances are people going to give them? I mean, I'm going to give them a lot. Don't get me wrong. but I'm generous that way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think they have plenty of rope, but they've got a long history, so I think they're okay. But, man, at some point, people are going to turn their backs. And I think, yeah, I think you're hearing rumblings of that now. There's some really disillusioned readers out there, that long-time disillusioned readers.
Well, and I think the New 52 kind of dumping the continuity and stuff really turned off a lot of people. So they've burned off some goodwill. They've got to earn it back, and they can. There's no question about that. It's a question of will they, and when will they, and how will they. So I don't know. It's I think they're, I don't say they're not coasting, but they're leveraging past goodwill versus really having energized their fan base, which is amazing given how well the TV shows are working, that they're not able to cash in on that and capture that magic on page. So
yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, all of that having been said, shall we move on to Marvel?
Yes.
This is Captain America White number 1. This is by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. This is the same creative team who coincidentally did Captain America White number 0 back in, I think it was July 10th, 2008. That was just a short 375 weeks ago. So here we are actually kicking the thing off and into full steam here, with a $4.99 book that's double size, partially because they reprint the first the zero issue in here, which I thought was nice, because I had zero recollection of it other than it came out and I read it at the time. But given how long ago it was, I've probably read somewhere in the ballpark of like at least 15,000 comics since then. And that's just going with a 40 comic a week average, which is probably a little low. I mean, the zero issue came out around the same time as like the middle of Secret Invasion. So the landscape has changed. Now, granted, this is a miniseries. It's a retro miniseries set back in the day in World War II, whatever. Get classic, you know, World War II, Cap and Bucky and stuff. So the changes in what's happening in the modern day Marvel kind of don't matter. But I think the changes that have happened in the industry, in the readership, do matter. And that this issue is coming out to a fundamentally different audience than the ones who were really jazzed about all the other Loeb and Sale kind of color books they had been doing at the time. Just because those are long since forgotten, I think. You know, Daredevil Yellow, Spider-Man Blue, Hulk Gray, all those things. This was a story that I liked, but, you know, again, World War II era Cap and Bucky, it's hard to go wrong with that. It's a natural setting for them. Getting the classic Nick Fury and Dum Dum Dugan, that was nice, with the Howling Commandos. Having kind of a, I don't say present day, but a framing sequence of set at the time of Cap's revival by the Avengers around Avengers 4 and stuff. Kind of cool, but it's one of those things that this felt dated, not because it's a period piece set in World War II, but because, again, the whole series of these miniseries that Loeb and Sale had done, that felt dated. And it's not bad. It's, I think Sale's art has evolved a bit if you compare the zero issue to the first issue. But it just, I don't know. It's not that I didn't like it. I did. But I think I would have liked it a lot more back in 2008.
Yeah, I thought it was me, because I have Hulk Gray and Daredevil Yellow and Spider-Man Blue, and I think about them vaguely as being good. I don't really remember them that well. Been a long time, and this was weird. It did feel out of place and dated, and it didn't feel like the right kind of storytelling. And it's not just the period piece element to it, because there's another Marvel book or two that I'm reading that are rooted in a different time, 1872. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying that. And Where Monsters Dwell is in a different time. And, you know, there's some stuff like that that I've been able to enjoy really well. So it's not just that element. It just felt, old-timey storytelling I can't appreciate it anymore, I guess. I've looked back at early Spider-Man, you know, by Stan Lee, and you know, I try to get into it, but it's just a different way of storytelling. It's just kind of crammed with words, and it's a lot of a lot of exposition and stuff in some of those issues back then, and I can't get into them with today's modern storytelling in comics. I don't really fully appreciate the old stuff as much as I should, and this feels like that. And so that's really a limitation for me, I guess, because I don't fully embrace this. But I don't know how many more people are out there that are like me. this would feel just like an odd read.
I mean, I can deal with different storytelling styles. It's a period piece, all of that kind of stuff. What seems to be the stumbling block for me to a degree is, one, the egregious delay between issues and them carrying on as if no time had elapsed for us. And I think we as a readership are at a fundamentally different place than we were back in 2008. Because at that point, there was still continuity was a bigger factor. Ongoing series were a bigger factor. I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to name any titles other than, say, Walking Dead, Invincible, Witchblade, if it hasn't ended already yet, that are being published now that were being published when the Zero issue came out.
And that current volume, you mean?
Current volume, yes, yes. Obviously, we still have Batman, Superman, but they're frankly a different Batman, Superman. And we're not that far away from potentially having a different continuity for Spider-Man and the Marvel stuff, depending what happens with Secret Wars. And there's an aspect here of the Cap and stuff that we're seeing here isn't the current Cap. I mean, because of what's changed in the meanwhile. And it almost felt, I don't say like they were going through the motions, but they were playing to a previous audience than where I'm at now.
Yeah, and it just doesn't fit in the lineup right now. I mean, with the Battle World stuff and the Secret Wars going on, I'm not sure why they didn't just hold this for the all-new, all-different launch.
Well, because it's an out-of-continuity, or I don't know if it's an out-of-continuity book or not, but it's not a part of the regular line the way a regular ongoing or miniseries mm-hmm. would be, but it seems like they want to just go back to the days when these kinds of miniseries from Loeb and Sale were a big deal. And I'm sorry, that's been nearly a decade now. So, I mean, what we got, I liked. I thought it was good, but I certainly wasn't wowed mm-hmm. and thought, geez, this is Jeff Loeb at his best. Or even Tim Sale at his best.
And, you know, it's not really even as good as the point one Spider-Man Learning to Crawl stuff that we got from Jerry Conway and those guys. That I thought was a little more successful in bridging the kind of nostalgic look back, early days look back mm-hmm. than this was. And that was as soon as I started reading, that's what I kept thinking. I kept referring to those retro Spidey stories that they've been rolling out every once in a while, and thinking, well, this is what they're trying to do, but it's just not as engaging. And
I think another example of that would be the Titans Games hardcover they did a while back with Wolfman Perez, and it was the classic New Teen Titans characters by the classic creative team, and it's a book that some of it had been worked on over the course of literally decades. So it was originally geared towards a certain storytelling style and methodology and stuff, and evolved a bit over time, yet still had kind of aspects of that. And there's a point at which, for me, that really worked because I loved that era of stuff and that creative team. But when a story's genesis is set in one era of storytelling style and mindset, and it takes 5-10 years, or in that case the game's hardcover 20-25 years, to come to fruition, you've missed the mark just because the expectations have changed so much. It would be like taking any top rated television show from 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, tossing it on the air now, and we're expecting different things now. Not better, not worse, different. And overall, I enjoyed this. I thought it had some good story to it. I like World War II era Cap and Bucky, but there's a part of me that if they hadn't come out with this, I was over missing it. I mean, I've moved on so much from where I was in July 2008. You know, I've been to, what, 7 or 8 Comic-Cons in San Diego since then. I've changed jobs. I mean, it's just my life is in a different place, and they're not talking to the me of now. They're basically pitched this to the guy I was back when they started this project. And I get it, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it definitely influenced how I read this. There was a feeling of them trying to go back to their glory days and stuff.
Who's going to like this then? Who's this going to be for?
I can tell you right now, Randy.
It's not for you. It's not for me.
I liked it. I just wasn't in love with it, and it was hard to get over the it took him forever to come out with it.
Right.
But Randy Z, who's a huge Cap fan, I think he'll love this. He also tends to like older stuff, so the fact it's a period piece won't bug him at all. And, you know, he may have been very much looking forward to this. I think there are fans out there of Loeb and Sale that have been eagerly awaiting this since it never came out back in 2008. So I do think there is an audience for this, but I question how much of that audience is still waiting for this, gave up on it, don't care, or are newer readers who don't even know really who these guys are and what put them on the map to begin with.
Yeah, and what's this collar thing about?
Yeah. Kind of a, what's the big deal about this? It's just a Captain America miniseries. And it is now, but it wasn't then. But, I mean, they're a good creative team. For me, this is above average stuff. I'm going to go with a B-, but I did kind of go into it. I mean, the whole point of the Zero issue was lost for me because I didn't remember any of it. Yes, they had it at the back of this. I'll be honest, I didn't bother to reread it. I just didn't see the point. I'd already just read the first issue, so it's not like it was going to help me with the story. This is the kind of thing where I really wish they would get in the habit, and they being Marvel, DC, the publishers, of when you've got a miniseries, just get the whole thing in-house before you solicit. If you cannot afford to pay the content creation costs before recouping it for a 6-issue miniseries or something, you're doing something wrong with the way you run your business. Now, smaller publishers, I get it. Different thing. Creator-owned properties, totally different thing. This is Marvel.
Yeah.
You know?
You can afford to bank it.
If you can't, why the hell not?
And maybe not launch it during the middle of your summer event. For me, I had some high expectations for this. I expected a lot more. I expected a lot more enjoyment than I got. That color is part of my review. Because I was disappointed, it's a below average book for me, so it's at a C-.
Okay, I can understand that. I'm going to be very curious to see where this hits on the sales charts and just what the general buzz is and how much of that buzz is coming from people who remember the other Loeb and Sale books and how much of it's coming from people who just, well, what's the big deal?
And I'll be interested in like issue 5, what its sales are.
I'll be interested in which decade it is.
After they've read a couple.
Yeah, I'm curious how the whole story is going to work out for me. Again, I love Cap, putting him in World War II, even just the framing sequence at that, him coming right out of the ice and stuff. I love that period as well. So, I mean, it hits some nostalgia buttons in some respects for me, others not so much. But
I think it touched on them. I don't think it really mined them.
Yes.
Yeah, it didn't really mine them as well as I would have liked.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that's where I'm coming from. I liked what I wanted them to do, not probably a bit more than what they did.
Yeah, potential was there.
Absolutely. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is The Paybacks #1 from Dark Horse. The writing team is Donnie Cates and Elliot Rahal. And we've got art by Jeff Shaw. And this was one that the high concept is you're in a Marvel DC superhero-ish kind of a universe. And these are the guys that are just kind of the repo men of, you know, hey, you're past due on your bills. So we're towing the Batmobile kind of a thing. And I was a little concerned coming into this that it was going to be heavy on the parody, light on the content, and kind of a one-note joke kind of a thing. And certainly the night, and that's night as in day and night, and night as in armored night, in that order. He's a clear Batman clone. I mean, no two ways about it. He's got an Alfred kind of a guy. So it starts off with art that was, not so great for me on the first page, and a concept of, okay, here are the repo men, got it. But then the direction it went actually turned out to be a lot of fun. Just getting to know the Night-Knight and getting to know his steed, Nightmare, which is a unicorn or whatever, or maybe that's just a mask on it, I don't know. It went in some bizarre directions and some places here and there that were just kind of fun and cool. I mean, it's highly derivative conceptually of Marvel DC type stuff. I mean, the villain here, Reflectoid, he's Mirror Master. But the way the battle between, you know, him and Night-Knight goes, and just how that ends, it's like, okay, wait a sec, this is kind of funny. Where are they going with this? It surprised me with some clever ideas, some original aspects, just the driver, the van, a few things like that.
It's not a van.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell's going on here? Well, wait, this is kind of interesting.
It's not a van.
This is something that I think could be dismissed as just, it's a stupid parody of superhero stuff. What's the big deal? It's more than that. And it didn't have to be, and I wasn't expecting that. And there are aspects of the story that flat out, I think, require and benefit from having some of the trappings that you would expect out of a Marvel or DC-style superhero universe. And it being, in some cases, heavily derivative of that is actually part of the fun. Because this is not a story I imagine you could really do over at Marvel or DC.
No.
But having some of those toys to play with or close facsimiles thereof, kind of fun.
Yeah, really, I thought the art was great. It had a little bit of Sean Murphy stylings to it. I really thought it was great. Is that Elliot Rahal that's doing the art then?
I thought it was Jeff Shaw that was doing the art.
Jeff Shaw's doing the art.
Inside front covers, the credits.
And just good stuff. Night-Knight, and I can't get myself to say it without chuckling, but Night-Knight and Nightmare, the fact that they're, like, he doesn't ride Nightmare, like, it's a horse, kind of, but he doesn't ride it, they're just, like, buddies and partners, which is kind of cool, and, you know, there's a whole thing about the van that is an interesting subplot, what is this thing, what is this van, and we just kind of scratched the surface, and there is some jokiness to it, which I was expecting more of. I thought it'd just be like pun after pun, and I'd be rolling my eyes, but it was a little smarter than that. And it had some fun stuff and some jokes in it, but then it also had a story. So I don't know how long if this is going to last, if this is a stealth miniseries or it's actually going to be an ongoing, but I think this would be fun for a little while, at least through the first arc. I want to see where this goes and meet more of the characters and learn a little bit more about some of these characters, because we just kind of touched on all of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's got some stuff that on the one hand, Night-Knight, it's like, okay, that's a little silly or whatever, but there are other ones like Misadventure, you know, Misadventure. It's a clever kind of a name. And, you know, it could have devolved into really bad puns, obvious one-note jokes or whatever, but they pulled some stuff out that was just fun, and unexpectedly so. You know, where they went in a few places with, again, he's got the Nightmare, but he never rides it. What's going on with that kind of a deal? I don't know, like you said, if this is a miniseries, an ongoing series, or what, but if they can keep up the quality, I'll stay with it. This was a pleasant surprise. It was one that's, I'll try it. It's a different take on superheroes. I'll see where they go. I got a lot more out of this than I was expecting. I don't know, like I said, what their game plan is for this, but it was fun.
Yeah, I agree. Fun comic. It was good. I started a little slow. But it picked up through as it went along. The art's strong. It's a good comic. I gave it a B.
Yeah. For me, I'm gonna go with a B plus. It's not quite at the point of hitting that A, but again, pleasant surprise. It has its own sense of tone, its style and identity. It is its own thing, even though, again, it's got some aspects that are, again, highly derivative, but it needs that for this to work. This is something that could have, based on the solicit, the cover, everything we saw ahead of time, could have very much been, yep, we got people, they're towing the Batmobile. Wow, that's funny. We've never seen that before, you know, kind of a thing. But the fact that they've got more to it than that, and just some, wow, I didn't see that coming kind of things, was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, good stuff.
So I've only read about half my stuff this week. I've had a couple other things going on. I'm trying to think if there was anything that just jumped out at me of, wow, this was amazing. It was a decent week.
I enjoyed Star Wars. Thought that was pretty good.
Gotten to that one yet or not?
And you know what else I picked up and got back into was Miracle Man. Now that they're through the Alan Moore stuff, mm-hmm. and into the game and stuff, I never read originally, so I was never able to get those issues back in the day. So now I'm in uncharted territory with the Gaiman run, and it's been fun to kind of revisit those because it's actually new territory. So I think it was smart of Marvel to renumber that when Gaiman took over and launch it again. And you know, we had kind of dismissed this after the first issue because it was overpriced and didn't really deliver. And it works a little better for me now. Is all I'm saying, because of the fact that it's fresher content for me.
It's still content I've read before.
Yes.
So until they get past that, it's falling into the overpriced and familiar content, and from a storytelling style that's not modern.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was something that I hadn't read before, I mean, I think I benefited from reading it back when I did, which was, I think, while it was still being done, before the whole thing had finished, because I think I ordered some of the later miniseries stuff off the rack, or, you know, pre-ordered them, whatever. So it was at least at that point reasonably modern storytelling style to our contemporary, I should say, and that helped. But it's one of those that it's older material, and I've kind of moved on from where I was when it was being written.
Mm-hmm.
That it's, and again, I've read it before.
If you haven't read it, there's it holds up, is what I'm saying.
Good.
The story, it's Neil Gaiman. He's pretty good. And so it holds up, and I still think when this is all said and done, this would be a nice hardcover to have, a collection, omnibus, however it's packaged, just to have on the wall, since it's really a cool idea and concept, and it was a good comic. So
yeah,
hopefully the pricing structure is a little better.
I hope they get to a point down the line where they can get it out in trades that are reasonably affordable, and more mm-hmm. people can experience it for the first time.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. And having read it before, things like The Authority, The Boys, and other things that were just kind of edgier or whatever, I mean, this is literally the book, or one of, that had kind of set the stage for some later things.
Mm-hmm.
So
After reading Prez number 4, if you didn't know that it was reduced from 12 to 6 issues, you knew after finishing this issue, because they tried to jam so much stuff in here that it really suffered for it. You could just see that, well, here's an idea that he was going to explore and take a little time with, but he's shortened it. Here's another idea that he was going to spend a little more time on, and they've just had to kind of cut a corner just to get the concept out there. And
yeah, that I haven't read that one yet. That's a shame. That reminds me of, what was it, James Robinson's last issue of Justice League, when it was more or less just kind of like Congo Bill, Supergirl, and a bunch of those characters, the Justice League. And it was like an issue of one-page splashes of each of the story arcs he was going to tell, and just kind of a summary of them.
Very sad when that happens.
Yeah. And I question if that's the right thing to do or not. I'm not saying it isn't, but just from a creative standpoint, maybe hanging on to those ideas and using them somewhere else fully fleshed out might not be a bad idea. I don't know. But on the other hand, it's kind of cool to see what would have been had they had the chance. It's a shame Prez isn't getting the opportunity for the full miniseries that it was solicited as.
Not enough of a fan outcrying like we got for Omega Man. So they did an about face, and the fans screamed out and said, we want more Omega Man. And DC said, hey, we'll give you 12.
Yeah, essentially uncanceling it.
It was originally going to be 12, and I didn't even know that. I don't even think I knew that it was originally going to be just a 12-issue run.
I did not know that. They did not solicit it as such.
And so, yeah, it makes me wonder if everything that's not listed as a mini from the beginning is actually a 12-issue max before it, unless it becomes a huge hit. Is that what we can derive from that?
I've come to the point where I look to the order forms, the shipping lists, my packing list at DCBS, and if it has, say, Prez number 4 of 6, well, geez, that's a miniseries. Now, it used to be of 12, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Bizarro, it's 4 of 6. That's a miniseries. Doomed number 4. That's an ongoing. Now, it may not last any longer than 6. Obviously, it's getting canceled at about that point, maybe 7, whatever. But to me, that's how I tell. And on the one hand, does it matter or not? I mean, it sets expectations. There are certain books that if it's a miniseries, yeah, sure, I'll try. If it's an ongoing, do I think it's a concept that's got legs for that or not? I just wish they would be upfront with what the expectation is. And hey, start it as a miniseries. If it goes well, extend it. There's no shame in that. Matter of fact, there's a good PR opportunity. Oh, we said it was going to be 6, but you know, the fans loved it. We're extending it another arc. If they still love it, we'll do it again. You know, it feels like a meritocracy at that point versus a crap, this didn't work either.
Yeah, but I mean, so why do you announce any of them as miniseries then? I mean, why not just put Batmite out, Bizarro out, Prez, just put them out, and they're all ongoing until they're not. I mean, why do you pick and choose and lie? It makes no sense.
I think they're better off saying they're miniseries, and if that turns out not to be the case, that's good. But if you say it's ongoing and they all start ending at 6, then it will crap. You can't keep it ongoing. You know, they lose face. They are canceling books, which is, well, it was supposed to end. You know, and it was supposed to end falls flat when you didn't tell us that to begin with. I don't care what you say you planned. You didn't tell us this.
Okay, so that's probably why the Big Two does that. But I guess for somebody like Image, they don't really have to worry about that reputation because it's not a publisher reputation. It's an individual creator reputation.
It's a little of both.
I don't ever blame Image for my issue being 3 months late. I know it's the creator's fault. It's not Image's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess if they want to say it's an ongoing, and they know it's really going to be one arc and then end, I guess I don't blame Image as much as I should, because it's really that's their responsibility as well.
To me, it's just a matter of being upfront, the creators and the publisher being upfront. If they don't know, they don't know, and that's fine. But if they know, hey, this is a 6-issue and we're done, lying about it or omitting that fact is, I think, counterproductive. If you're going to err, you're better off erring on the side of it's a miniseries than it's an ongoing.
Well, it's totally frustrating for me as a reader, and I just might be super sensitive to it, but The Humans, a comic that I love at Image, and I find out like 4 or 5 issues in that it's only going to be a 9-issue series, and it bugs me, makes me mad.
Why?
Know? I don't know, because I'm like invested in it, and I want it to go on, and if they knew it was going to be a miniseries the whole time, why didn't they tell me?
Yeah, I guess for me it's the withholding of information that's annoying, or
yeah.
In the setting of expectations. If I love something and it's like, wow, this is just going to keep going as long as I keep buying it. Oh, no, we always planned to kill it after 6. We didn't care if you liked it or not. Really? I mean, that's how it sort of comes across, how it feels, whether it's their intent or not. And for them to we meant it to be that way, just it rings so false.
I know something like a Jupiter's Legacy – you know, it sold strongly enough as a six issue series that they, you know, just relaunched another volume, prequel or whatever. And so that stuff is cool, I guess, when that happens. You get a little bit more than you thought you were going to get.
I was thinking Jupiter's Legacy is a 12-issue thing that's still going to happen, but because it's so delayed, they just put Jupiter's Circle in between.
Oh, God, really?
I think. I'd have to double-check.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So Quietly is just going to work ahead.
Hopefully.
Okay.
But this also goes back to, if you know it's a miniseries, and maybe this is why they don't announce it as such, but there's, I think, a reasonable expectation of, it's only six issues. Get it in the can, get it out on time. You know, if it's ongoing, it's like, well, okay, you're behind the eight ball, I get it. You'd never catch up. You can't hold the whole thing till it's all done, because it's ongoing. It's impossible. But Sandman Overture, Captain America White that we talked about, there are other books that it's only a handful of issues. Get it done, then put it out. Flip side, if they do that, they could just go straight to a hardcover or a trade. There's an option too, and I get that not being viable, like I said earlier, for an individual creator or a smaller publisher, but you know, all the stuff they launched for Secret Wars over at Marvel, would it have killed them to say, yeah, this is a five-issue miniseries?
This is a four. This is a six, you know? Yeah, give us a little clue as to how long this is going to go. And
at the very least, if you're not going to do that, if you know this is the final issue of something, listed as such in previews. Last issue, final issue, whatever verbiage you want to use. Be consistent, though. Final issue is a good one. Overdone, I shouldn't worry about ordering anymore. I can jump off it clear conscious. I don't need to go look for it. Versus, you know, what the hell happened? Did they just not solicit this for a couple of months? Is it over? Is it not? You know, the uncertainty is really counterproductive.
Now, with them launching or adding an extra issue to the Secret Wars miniseries, do we anticipate there being a problem with that not having been wrapped up and the all new, all different stuff already, the first issues being launched?
No, not at all. It's no different than the original Secret Wars. They go in 1 month, they come out the next, and they've gotten one issue of the book out of 12. Well, geez, the Fantastic Four went in with the Thing. Why is She-Hulk coming out with a Fantastic Four uniform? What's up with that? You can make that work.
Okay.
You know, and they're apparently going to roll forward the timeline, 8 months or something, you know, coming out. So, depending what's in that final issue, it may be, well, geez, you really should have told us that before. Or, I don't know, but it doesn't have to not work is what I'm saying.
Okay. That'd be cool if it's like that, yeah.
It also felt like they had an issue recently, I guess it was five, that felt like a little bit of a breather or a off-to-the-side issue that may not have been what was originally. I forget which one was not originally planned and how they're expanding it, whatever, but it comes into have your story fleshed out enough before you start that you know how many issues it will take to do. You know, it's, to me, basic estimation and stuff, and when you've got delays on a major event like they've had with this one, and I mean, not to the point of, say, Civil War or something, but it starts impacting other books.
How bad was Civil War?
That pretty much ground the Marvel Universe, not to a halt, because it trickled out. They spread things out, but about a month. And it was something that meant most of the core books that were tying into this were a month late. So they never had any week that had nothing. But it's like, okay, well, we'll drag this a week back, this 2 weeks, you know, and kind of spread the load out or something. But it was, it rippled into, I'm thinking 40 or 50 issues. I could be wrong. It was a huge deal at the time.
I can't believe they could afford to do that.
Either that or you undercut your event series. You know, when you've got that many things tied together and intertwined storytelling-wise, you've got to have your ducks in a row. And they're basically doing things too close to the vest. I mean, they don't have the lead time for if somebody gets sick, slow, whatever. Well, it's late, and if it's a big deal, well, this had to tell before this happened. Otherwise, this doesn't make sense, and it'll spoil the impact of this story or what have you. Not that they always care about that at the big two. They should build in a buffer. But that costs money to do. It's bad enough to try to do it on a single miniseries. Trying to do it for your entire line, to where every book is ready a month before you kick it out, or 2 months or something, that just doesn't happen. And I get that would be a financial hit. But the only publisher that I recall that had a prolonged period of multiple years where their books came out like clockwork. They did not miss damn near anything, was CrossGen. Now, whether that was a great place to work for and stuff, I've heard mixed things, but their books came out on time. You know, there have been times where there were certain, well, Hawkeye's a great example over at Marvel. You know, they've had other books where it's like, I thought the book had just ended. It'd been so long since I'd seen a solicit for one. Oh, it popped back up. You know, hard to keep track of what books you're reading if the publishers don't help with that.
Yeah, my current concern is it feels like we've already slowed down the schedule of releases for the Secret Wars title itself. And it seems like we're getting to the end of all the Battle World titles. And it is, I'm just concerned that there's going to be a couple issues of the all new, all different. And at that point, why do I even care anymore about the how Secret Wars ends? I'm concerned that it's that far behind.
I think that's a fair concern, but it really comes down to what's in that final issue. Does most of the stuff wrap up, and then it's just a, well, what about these couple of characters? I can see a way in which...
We don't have six yet, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah. Well, and again, some of the tie-in limited series or ongoing, whatever we want to call them, have they're ended.
Done. Yeah, they're done.
Others have a few issues left. So, yeah, it's going to be kind of an odd thing, depending. If it's just the final 9th issue or something, that's one thing. But if we still have got 7 and 8 and stuff, that's... I don't say problematic, but that's really disappointing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it had some... I was in... Those first 4 issues were humming along pretty darn good. Like you said, the 5th issue, although it was good, did seem a little fillery. So we'll see what happens with 6 when it comes out.
I get most publishers not being able to do it, but if there is not somebody over at Marvel and somebody over at DC that is tracking what... creators meet their deadlines, which ones don't, by how often and how frequently do they miss it, and adjust their schedules accordingly. Why not? You know, you hire somebody like, you know, I'm not going to name any particular names. There are a couple of people that, you know, they're going to be late. They're never on time. Others, man, you could set your clock by it and they're still going to come in fast, you know, or early or something. And even some that are in one category sometimes flip into the other in both directions. Somebody who's never missed a deadline, eventually they will. Somebody who's never on time, something happens, they get it in on time. But play the odds, know the history of these creators, and particularly when you've got titles that are all building towards a major event, be it, you know, the stuff going on right now with Secret Wars, or be it back in the day with the Civil War stuff, or, you know, one or two of the books... crossover event books over at DC that have had some delays here and there. Do something about it. Plan accordingly. Try to get the ones that are at risk of being late, get those done early. So
I would be really curious to see the staffing at DC, you know, maybe the second year in at New 52 when they were still in New York, and then their staffing now after the move to Burbank. Because I know there was a significant portion of staff that didn't make the trip. And I'd be curious to see what their org chart looks like, if they filled all those positions, if they still have vacancies everywhere, if they're at full right back where they were, you know, solid, didn't miss a beat. I'd be curious to see how significant that trip was.
My understanding is they lost about a third. I think that wound up being about 90 people. And my expectation, although I don't know this for certain, is they're pretty much staffed up. But... it's not just a matter of do they have the people, it's how much of that tribal knowledge transferred. You know, you lost somebody like Bob Wayne, that's a hit, but Bob Wayne was surrounded by a ton of people who knew a ton of stuff. There are other people at DC, so it's not like you've lost all of his knowledge or even, you know, I mean, there's a hit there, but there are also other advantages to, you know, somebody else knows some of what he knew and is going to operate in a different way. Maybe that's better, maybe that's worse, whatever. You know what I mean? It's who do they lose where, how do they fill which positions, and how much did that really hurt their momentum? And that's a tough question.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to lose some people, you're going to replace sometimes somebody better, sometimes somebody worse. And in either case, you may replace them with somebody better, but they're not in a as influential or getting listened to or whatever, so it doesn't matter. Or vice versa. They're worse, but they're not getting to listen to, so it's not as harmful. I don't know. It's the dynamic over at DC has, in certain respects, fundamentally changed. But they really need to kind of galvanize their forces, step up creatively and editorially, and get their ducks in a row. Start telling some great stories and get people to notice.
I understand it's not black and white, but it feels like when they were based in New York, you know, that's a publishing capital of the world, you know, New York, whereas LA is more Hollywood, of course. And, you know, that's the type of people that are staffing DC's offices are Hollywood based people, not publishing based people.
I think that may be a very good thing. So potentially they're going to be influenced by people that are, say, doing successful TV shows like Arrow and Flash, that did shows that lasted 10 years, like Smallville, or that re-energized an entire generation of fans around Batman with the animated series by Bruce Timm and such. So there are a lot of influences over at Warner Brothers and elsewhere in the Hollywood stuff that could completely re-energize the creative and editorial forces over at DC and the marketing forces, for that matter, in a really beneficial way.
Or they write a lot of notes and destroy books by committee,
which was happening back in New York.
That's true. We did
hear that. So I don't think it's something. I don't think they're in a position where it's more likely to hurt than help. DC is floundering a bit. Marvel, you know, people by and large are liking what they're doing. So how can DC have 7 TV shows on the air this season that just started and not get that to somehow benefit their comics? It doesn't make sense.
It should be some kind of tie in there, some kind of bounce.
They ought to be able to leverage it somehow, some way, but hopefully they will. I mean, season just started, so we'll find out.
Yeah.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Grayson number 12 from DC, Fury, S.H.I.E.L.D. 50th Anniversary number 1 from Marvel, and Power Cubed number 1 from Dark Horse.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.